Football is a funny old game. One moment you're rueing a flop £8 million signing who cannot score for Toffee, and the next you're riding high off the back of his game-changing hat-trick. This week, Reading have come full circle and in the doldrums again after a 3-2 defeat at home to Birmingham. Welcome to episode 212 of the Tylersen podcast with your host Mark Mayo and Simeon Pickup, the editor of thetylersen.com, joins me this week. How is it going, mate?
Frustrated, to be honest. It's just a game that felt like one we didn't need to lose, one that we just lost because of our own mistakes, our own errors, which is always more frustrating when you got a good chance to get a big 3 point and you let yourself down. But there you go.
Yeah, and what I suppose this is the game for me that brought that question forward. It's been a few weeks time now. We come into January and the transfer window, and it just starts making me think of how we're going to switch things up, because with Ovie Ajayi and John Swift and Sam Baldock being missing for this game against Birmingham, it's just about time. Maybe we'll think a little bit later in the show about what we can do to rejuvenate the squad. But let's jump in and think about that defeat in its entirety in the recap and talk about what went wrong for Mark Bowen's team.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
So Sim, was the first question I have really for this game is, was the defence really as bad as the scoreline suggests? When you concede three goals at home, obviously it's a bit of an autopsy that needs to take place. And going through the goals, I mean, the first one is just a ridiculous sort of, you can use the word lucky, you can use the word unfortunate, but it's just a ridiculous goal to have conceded with Michael Morrison going in for a sort of half clearance, maybe doesn't predict where the ball's going to go and it just pings into the back of the net. Kind of reminds me of when Peter Whittingham fluked it in from 45 yards against us for Cardiff about 2012 or 2010 maybe. The second goal, good free kick, Raphael, couple questions, but nonetheless a really good free kick that you have to hold your hands up. And the third, I think it's a goal of circumstance, really, a goal that you concede when you're behind in a game and you're chasing it and there's a bit more space and an error or something happens and it makes it easier for them to score. So really, are you concerned by the fact that we've conceded three goals, or do you think that it's kind of a, you know, one of those days?
It's not necessarily those particular three goals that I'm worried about. The first two are the kind of freak goals that you can concede, however well you're defending. To be honest, you get those freak deflections like you did for the first goal, and the second one is just a really fantastic free kick. Maybe Raphael could have done better, but when it's hit that well across him into the top corner, it's just the quality from the free kick, really, and you can't really legislate for that. You can't really assume that people are going to hit free kicks that well each week. The third one is the most worrying one. It's when Richards just kind of switches off and Birmingham pounce. And I think that was more representative of our defending, particularly in the second half. We were just lost concentration. We conceded space far too easily in the second half. It's not shown as much in that third goal, but particularly the fact that it's one that we shouldn't have conceded. And there are other points in the second half when we were just far too open, particularly in front of the defence. Birmingham getting at our back line far too easily and getting chances far too easily. And it's not the kind of defending we've seen from Reading in the last couple of weeks under Bowen. It's been a lot more compact, a lot more aggressive. And for some reason that just went really against Birmingham, which is really frustrating. And you wonder if it's more of an off day or it's something that's come about from the absence of Swift and Ajayi, that the team doesn't feel as focused and quite as enthused in their absence, even defensively. But yeah, it's something that Bowen's got to work on. And if he doesn't, then Reading are going to get into a bad habit of conceding sloppy goals, the kind of sloppy goals that lose you games at the end of the day.
Well, the stats do suggest that with Reading only having 42% of the possession, that with Swift and Ajayi not being there, that just I think our general control of the game is the sort of thing that goes without those two. And obviously, you know, we are ultimately shoehorning Gareth McCleary in. We bring Charlie Adam off the bench, who again does quite well, but it's quite unrealistic, especially with our two away games coming up, to expect him to do a 90-minute performance. And then you've got Pelle and Rinomata, who you get bits and bobs on the ball, but ultimately their sort of prowess is in off the ball and being a bit energetic there. So I think when it comes to our defence, they do have a big impact because, you know, they keep us having the ball and we can't concede with the ball, but also in attack. And it's weird, isn't it, that we've not had Swift, Ajaria and Baldock, who I think are our best three attackers for the last two games. We've picked up 3 points in that time. We've actually scored 5 goals, which is pretty impressive given that we've missed them. But I think for me that the worries with chance creation, it's in open play, isn't it? We obviously scored from set pieces and stuff over the weekend, but the open play chance creation, the sort of goals that we scored, you know, the Ajaria one against Luton, for example, which Swift set up on the counter attack and stuff like that, those are the ones that go missing when they're not in the team, and they're, you know, ultimately the hardest goals to score, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It comes about by players being individually very confident and trying to make things happen. When Swift and Jory get on the ball, they really get their head up and try and make something happen. They're always positive. They're always thinking, how can I hurt the opposition when I'm on the ball? But you compare them to Rinomhota and Pele, particularly, who are more defensively, and they're naturally going to think, how do I not make an error on the ball? How do I not give it away? Because they're not going to have the same confidence to play a big raking pass out to the opposite side of the pitch. They're not going to make a really incisive through ball in the same way that Ajaria or Swift could do. And it makes the whole midfield dynamic a lot more passive. No one really kind of getting onto the ball and trying to make things happen. And at the end of the day, that's what you want people to do. You want people to be positive and really try and come up with that clever little moment in the midfield to put you on the front foot. And the midfield three we had just isn't capable of doing that. And I think particularly when you've got someone in the creative role like McCleary in the midfield three, who's naturally more of a winger, someone who wants to play this out wide to run at a defence and get a cross in, he's not as good in tighter areas in the midfield where he's going to have a lot more pressure from the opposition. He's going to have less time on the ball to do something. And when you're asking someone like him to come up with that little bit of cleverness on the ball, to come up with a clever pass that splits the defence or kind of switches the play out to someone, he's not able to do that, and the opposition find it far too easy to counter.
They do, and that's the thing with McCleary as to why he has been successful in the past few weeks, is because he's done it off the bench. And he's had that time and space on the ball, even in the central areas, because teams are more tired. And he's able to sort of make the most of that. One thing I do want to say before we move on and hear what Mark Rowan had to say is that did we kind of underestimate Birmingham in this? I'm not saying as a team, but as fans, because we go into these sort of games, obviously we've done quite well under Mark Bowen at home since he's taken over. We've gone up against a team like Birmingham who are kind of mid-table-ish, don't really know many of their players, their manager's a bit of an unknown quantity as well, not a very glamorous side, and we probably as fans thought we were going to win this one. Birmingham had drawn their last 3 games 1-1. That included a trip to Sheffield Wednesday, which is a very difficult place to go. Is it just, when we say, you know, when Reading win 3-0, we often ask the question, were Reading good or were the opposition bad? To kind of flip that over for this time, do you think that Reading were bad or were Birmingham actually just quite good?
Birmingham were really good, actually, I thought. I was impressed by how solid they were at the back and they moved the ball forward really well. Really good interplay, really kind of sharp movement between players, and in the second half that really showed when Reading gave them chances to get at us, when there were spaces opening up in the midfield, Birmingham were able to exploit them. And if they'd gone a goal or two up earlier on in the second half, then I don't think we could have had too many complaints. I think the thing is with teams like Birmingham, when it's a team in mid-table, Reading fans are naturally going to think, right, this is more winnable than, say, Preston at home, who are obviously flying high, Brentford and Leeds as well, who we took on recently, got edged out by quite narrowly. You're going to look at games like that and think, OK, it's not too bad if we lose 1-0, or it's really impressive if we do win 1-0 against Preston, that is. But when it's a team in mid-table, you kind of get a bit complacent. You kind of think, oh, they're only mid-table, we're playing at home. And it's not just a little bit of complacency for the fans, it's complacency for the players as well. I think they're naturally going to raise their game a little bit more when it's a team towards the top of the table and perhaps be a bit more urgent when it's a team towards the bottom of the table, like we saw against Wigan, getting that late turnaround. But you can just get complacent when a team in mid-table turns up, and Birmingham punished us for that.
Yeah, and hopefully in the next few weeks we'll be able to flip it on. You know, we did it against QPR, went and got a good point there. We obviously did it against Wigan, going away a team's thinking that they should be beating us, and that, you know, plays in our favour. So that's just a thing. Probably just a word of caution to the fans, really, is that this is not yet a playoff sort of team that we're watching, and therefore these sort of days are going to happen. And when Birmingham score some decent slash lucky goals, then that's just how it pans out. But we'll hear what Mark Bowen thought about the game. Now, he wasn't too pleased, as you can imagine. And then we'll jump on to the next part of the recap and just consider what we do in January.
Yeah, very frustrated. I just said to the lads there that, you know, we've got two magnificent, what I call passes of the ball players who are missing today, John Swift and Ovi. But, you know, we've got to be braver. The lads who are coming into the setup, we've got to be braver to get on the ball and make us play. You know, and I thought basically that was missing today. You know, you get a good away result last week, and then everybody thinking, well, it's a home game. We fancy ourselves at home to beat anybody. But we won't do it. We won't do it in performances like that. We were poor. We were poor on the ball, and we've got to be better. You know, I'm expecting more calmness in possession from my players, more braveness in possession, which we didn't have today, in terms of staying the ball and pick a pass. And okay, I can accept anybody giving the ball away. It happens in football, but go and get it again and again and again. And, you know, I think, you know, as a team, as the game went on, you know, we did create one or two chances that on another day would have gone in. And, you know, I look at their chances and one own goal, one free kick, and the last one, again, was created by us, being poor in possession, not retaining it as we should have done. So, you know, but it's, you know, everybody keeps saying it. In this league, those little details mean a hell of a lot.
Right then, Sim, it's getting to that point now of we're getting towards Christmas and all that, and the busy period that'll be, and thinking about the January window opening, and it's going to be a difficult window, I think, because Reading don't have a lot of money. We shouldn't have a lot of money anyway, because I don't know where we're making this sort of money if we're going to go and spend it on players in January. But I don't, to start off the conversation, I don't think many players are going to be leaving, you know, high quality players. I don't think we're necessarily going to lose someone like John Swift or Ajaria in January. Ajaria, obviously, difficult to work out the exact terms of that loan if that wants to take place. But in terms of incomings, where do you think we need to focus? We've got three relatively experienced centre-backs. We've got a lot of full-backs, you know, two right-backs and a young right-back. We've got two left-backs and Tyler Blackett, so I guess we've got three left-backs. Centre-mids, two sort of defensive types and then two attacking types. Obviously, Charlie Adams to add into that as well. We've got a lot of strikers. Kind of seems like we have a full squad.
Yeah, the quantity is fine across the team. Good options, as you say, but I think if we are going to do anything, it's just about rebalancing. Basically, we've got a good number of centre midfielders, for example, but not enough of them can pick a pass, can really control a game, unlock a defence. And when you take out people like Ajaria and Swift, then we badly miss them. So if we could get in someone who's a bit more of a ball player in there, then that would be a big boost. Charlie Adams should be able to do that, but obviously he's not going to be able to play regularly week in, week out. The problem is, of course, that when you already have quite a few central midfielders, you can't really just go out and bring in, say, Lewis Baker and expect them to add the team without it really upsetting the dynamic. Unless you, say, let go of Pelé or move Charlie Adam on, there's not really the room in the squad at the moment to just bring someone in. It's about rebalancing. And same up front as well, we've got plenty of centre forwards. The fact that we got someone like Yaku Mate, last season's top scorer, not necessarily being our best forward. Lucas Zhao on the bench, Boye in there, Baldock, Puskas, Loader. There's a lot of people, and I do think we're more likely to maybe let go of one or two players that aren't happy to be on the bench, or a couple of players that aren't going to be doing well enough in their loan spell. They're not enough of a return, particularly someone like Boye, who I think is yet to score a goal. Pelé hasn't made a huge impact since coming in, and maybe there'll be that little bit of rejigging, but I don't expect anything major.
Yeah, that's the thing with outgoings. You do wonder, I mean, you say Boye, let's take him as an example. What are we really going to be gaining in the next few months with having him around? Because the competition is very high. We've got young players that are doing, you know, ultimately do a decent-ish job when they come onto the pitch. He hasn't set the world alight, and maybe he doesn't want to be in Reading if there's no long-term future. If the club want to go and sign him permanently, then that might change things up. But I think for January, it's going to be loan market players, isn't it? And I just think if we can bring in someone who, you know, maybe as you say about Charlie Adam, that sort of player, but maybe just a little bit younger, or maybe another Sam Baldock-type striker, then I think we go a long way. Do you fear someone like Swift or Jario, or, you know, maybe Moore, Miazgas, Yadoms? Do you fear someone coming in for them? Do you think there's any, or maybe Yaku Mate, who's almost left previously?
I think Mate is the most likely out of any of those, because obviously he was very close to leaving last season until I think Dai Yonge stepped in, basically cancelled the move. As for other players there, people like Yadom, Swift as well, you'd imagine more so that teams going to come in for them in the summer. We're in a good position financially. We're in a good position with contracts generally. I think we're in a place where we can refuse offers. And when you're like that, I don't think teams are going to want to be getting into a bidding war over someone like Swift in January. They're going to prefer to wait until the summer, when bringing in someone like him is going to be more of a part of a rebuilding job for them, rather than splashing that kind of money in the middle of the season. So from that point of view, we're set up quite well for January, but yeah, on the whole, don't know how it's going to play out.
Yeah, I'm certainly not expecting a revolution, but maybe a bit of evolution wouldn't go amiss. And that's the sort of thing that we'll be discussing over the next few weeks. And obviously, as January opens and everything, we'll keep you up to date, and obviously keep your eyes peeled on the tylerstand.com and the Facebook and the Twitter for all of the updates. In fact, we just had a young Gabby Alosho go out on loan yesterday to Yeovil, I think it was. So yeah, still a couple of things going on in terms of transfers, but not too many rumours have been floated about yet. Expect that to pick up in the next few weeks. But in the meantime, let's move on to the mailbag. Those thoughts that you always want to send in on Facebook and Twitter and thetarlestend@gmail.com. We'll read them out in the next section and talk about what you want to talk about.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetarlestend.com.
Pete Straw opens us up then with the question you've just heard Mark Bowen speaking. He asks, will Bowen pay for throwing the players under the bus post-match? And will his inability to take any responsibility himself for his role in our defeat yesterday, he was as culpable as the players, Pete Straw says. So, Sim, Bowen's sort of reaction in the media, I think really, I think he's just sort of, he's going to put himself across as the type of guy who does sort of speak his mind in the media quite freely. Does that affect the players? Well, it depends what he says to them privately, really. And for now, I'm not going to be too worried about what he says, because, you know, we've just spoken about the sort of errors and the sort of stuff that did happen during the game. And if he knows how to fix it, then I suppose that sort of will solve the problems that he's come up with.
Well, it's his first big challenge as manager, really. You go back to his first couple of defeats, it was more of Reading being outclassed by some really good sides. But now over the last two games, over the vast majority of those last two games, Reading have been really poor. And yeah, there is the excuse that Ajari and Swift aren't there, but he does need to really look at his own role in that, look at the tactics that he's used on each occasion and take responsibility for it. I was bemused when he put out the same team yesterday as he did against Wigan, to be quite honest. I was thinking that was one of the least likely things he'd do after Reading was so poor there. I think it just shows perhaps him being a little bit too safe, not being proactive enough. He thought that the best opportunity for Reading would be to just go with the same 3-5-2 we've done every week, pretty much the exact same setup, and just stick with it. And he's been shown very clearly now that it's not a good idea, whether you're playing away from home or at home. It's not a formation that works, it's not a system that works when you don't have people like Baldock, Swift and Ajaria. And if he doesn't react, then the negatives from the last two games are really going to be for nothing. It's really stuff you have to learn from, basically, as your manager, especially a really recently appointed manager like him, a very inexperienced one like him. He's got to learn from it and find something different, because if he does put out the same starting 11 pretty much, the same system pretty much in midweek at Barnsley, then I have to wonder where his head is at with that kind of decision. But there you go, I live to be proved wrong.
Well, just to make it clear, do you think it is the personnel or the tactics that were weird? Because I think when it comes to personnel, I think he was a little bit constrained. You look at the bench that Reading had available to them. Obviously, Charlie Adam can't really do 90 minutes. You could have played Boye or Loader if you wanted to. Lucas Zhao just came back from injury, probably not able to do 90 minutes yet. But do you think it was that, or was it just the system that needed sort of changing up?
It's mainly the system. Like, despite not having Swift and Ajaria, there's still more than enough talent there to put out a very different team to what we've seen recently in the last two games. When you've got people like Zhao who can offer something very different to Mete. To be honest, that was one of the most frustrating things about it. When you've got talented forwards in there like Zhao and Boye sat on the bench, and we go with the same strike partnership, Mete and Puskas, that has failed really badly this season, to be quite honest. They're two similar players in that they want to kind of get out of defence and get in behind if possible. There's not one who's naturally going to act as a foil for the other in the same way that, say, Baldock is going to work with Puskas. And we should know that is not a good partnership, because it's failed really badly at Bristol City in the first half in Gomez's last game. And Bowen's tried it since. I think he tried it in his first game against Preston, tried it against Wigan, tried it against Birmingham as well. It's a partnership that really doesn't work. And you can blame the players quite a lot for not playing well enough. And I was frustrated by Mete and Puskas to a decent extent against Birmingham. But when you're putting out a team that just doesn't really make sense, I don't think, particularly a decision like that to pair them together, that's on Bowen, to be quite honest. He should have known that he needs someone who can work with Puskas, who's more of a link man, someone who can support him. And when you've got Boye and Zhao in there, then you got people to do that. And maybe they wouldn't have played well, maybe it wouldn't have quite worked for them against Birmingham, but it at least would have shown a bit of a sensible reaction from him to what we've already seen go wrong before. And it's really frustrating, and I just badly hope he learns his lesson.
Well, I think Luke Rogers does as well, because he asked, will we ever see the end of the five at the back system? And if/when we do, will you be happy with it gone? I think, seeing you've just kind of said that you would be. I will point out that one of the first, I kind of wrote on the website just before Bowen was appointed, that I wanted to see the new manager, whoever came in, you know, of the five or six points I wanted them to do. One of them was to get rid of the system, and I was quite surprised when he stuck with it, and yet it worked quite well. Now we're at the stage, however, that maybe it is a chance to switch it up. We're going to go and play a Barnsley team who I think play quite narrow, looking at their formation, which might demand that we change things around for the midweek game. The question is, what do you replace it with, Sim? Because, you know, we're going to be without Swift on Wednesday night. We only really have Gareth McCleary as an actual winger. He has, you know, done 60 minutes on Saturday. Is he fit enough to go and do 90 minutes on the Wednesday? Do you want to move Yaku Mete out to the wing? Do you want to start Lucas Boye? Probably would, if he's one of the only wingers there. Would you sort of go with a 4-2-3-1, with a 4-4-2? What would you actually replace it with?
Just on the 3-5-2, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. And I think to a large extent, Bowen was right to keep it. He made some sensible tweaks to it. For example, bringing the wing-backs back a little bit so that the defence wasn't getting quite as exposed when they pushed up. He switched Swift and Ajaria around, changed little things like that. It's not necessarily just the 3-5-2. It's how specifically it's used. And when you try and replace Swift like-for-like with Palais, Ajari a like-for-like with McCleary, then it's not necessarily going to work. And the same with putting Mato and Puskas up there. Yeah. You can still make a decent amount of changes to the team, even keep them 3-5-2. You can go with more of a player playing off the striker up top. You can rebalance the midfield a little bit. But I guess going against Barnsley, where we're going to have to try and be more on the front foot because of how slowly they've started this season, we need to try and dominate the game if we can. I guess a back four is logical, but there's obviously no obvious team to put out. 4-4-2 is one that can work, but it does leave us exposed quite a bit through the middle if we get it wrong there. And when we did go to more of a 4-4-2 against Birmingham, it was sometimes painful just how much space opened up between Rinomota and Pelé, because a two-man midfield can be quite problematic. I'd go 4-2-3-1 if we can. We've got people like Boye, Mate, McClear, I guess, Ajari, hopefully, if he's back, who can go in that three. But yeah, there's no clear and obvious alternative system for us. I think we just have to rely that Ajari is back and can make an immediate impact.
Yeah, I was hoping. Loyal Royal asks, let's focus on the good points from Bowen's matches. Can we see a backbone of a Bowen team forming? What changes do we need to that? Personally, it still feels like we have some good players already, but still not finding their best. Will they ever? And that backbone, I mean, if we're going to stick with the 3-5-2, there is a backbone forming there. We have the three-man centre midfield when it's all there. The three-man centre defence is relatively decent. If we have Baldock up front with one of Zhao, Puskas, whoever it is, if we have all our best players, it's important to remember, we do still have a decent team there, don't we?
Yeah, so if you put the injured players back in the team, you do have a really good side there, basically. It wasn't too long ago that we were talking about a team that was barely changing week to week. It was maybe a Beater and Richard swapping, maybe the odd change elsewhere, but generally it was kind of, we knew our best 11. And I guess it is, with that in mind, a little bit possible to just overstate how bad things are at the moment over the last two, because if you do put Baldock back in the side, you put Ajari and Swift back in the side, then we could very well be back to how we were. But in the meantime, we do need to find a short-term fix.
Well, that's what Royal Robin asks as well. He says, do we need to adapt our style when Ajari and Swift are injured to put creative wingers instead of wing-backs? When we lack creativity through the middle, we need to find an alternative way to create threat. That means Elise and Barrett for me. Well, with the sort of players that aren't playing at the moment, I suppose Elise and Barrett are among them. Do you think that there is a place for the sort of academy players to sort of step up in this moment? We've kind of shoehorned back in McCleary. We've used Charlie Adam to a good effect. Bowen hasn't really relied on the academy players in his tenure as of yet. I can't think of anyone who's really emerged or got a chance. Teddy Howe was kind of, you could say, ignored for the Leeds game when Gunter came in, although I would say that's probably a good idea for that sort of game. But with the academy and that as an alternative threat, do you think that is something we are kind of ignoring at the moment, or is that for later in the season when we are a little bit safer?
I think when a team is so badly lacking in creativity and so badly lacking in a spark, it is frustrating that you kind of stick with the kind of players that aren't necessarily going to offer that. When you've got people like McCleary, Rinomota and Pelé in the midfield together, individually fine, but put them all in there and there's not the creativity. And when you do have someone like Barrett available, who's come up with a couple of goals and assists this season already, he's already produced pretty well. When he's sat on the bench, not able to get in the side, and Elise is there as well, who emerged quite well last season, you do just think that one of them would offer the kind of spark, the kind of magical moment that other players just aren't at the moment. And when they're looking at, I think Elise scored this week as well for the under-23s, when they're looking at Boye coming on and having a really poor impact against Birmingham, they're both going to be looking at the team and thinking, why can't I get a chance off the bench? If I've been impressing the under-23s, this should be my opportunity to come in and get given that chance. And I think from Bowen's point of view, it would be helpful to bring that extra kind of idea. It's obviously not without risks. They're both pretty raw and inexperienced relatively compared to someone like McCleary, but it does still liven things up in a way that just picking the same players isn't gonna do.
No, and that is the thing when it comes to January again. If we are gonna send, you know, someone like Boye or Pele back, are we gonna be doing that as a case of bringing in an academy player to replace them, or just to sign another loanee and try again, basically? But that is that's all to be seen. And in the meantime, as you just mentioned, under 23s. Then let's jump into News Bites and talk about what's been going on around the club this week.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
So very conveniently, Arsenal women come to Reading women in about 45 minutes. That game kicks off, so we can't deliver the result as we're recording this podcast quite early. So go and check the Tilehurst End Twitter and the Reading FC women's Twitter to see how they got on against Arsenal women. That's quite unlikely they'll do well, but I'm happy to be proved wrong with that, because Arsenal, very good team. The under-23s, they won 1-0 at Newcastle on Saturday. They are at the Madstad on Monday the 16th, the evening for Man United at home. So if you want to go down and see that, the gates are open. And they're also going to be open for the under-18s on Thursday at 7 p.m. It is the FA Youth Cup. Crystal Palace coming to town to face the under-18 to beat Spurs 3-2 on Saturday. So a good little win for them to get back into winning ways before they go and have the FA Youth Cup game against Palace. Reading always looking to do well in the FA Youth Cup, and hopefully not getting thrown out of it this year for playing someone who's a little bit too young. And last bit of news, as there's not been too much going on around the club this week, Sim, but Ovi Ejaria has won the Tilehurst End's Player of the Month award for November. This is the third time in four that he's won it. He won the first one, then John Swift won the September award. October was Ovi's again, and then November, Ovi's. For 3 and 4. And Sim, I must admit, I was a little bit surprised when the fans voted for Ejaria, because I thought John Swift probably was just going to take it. He was exceptional against Luton, and then kind of, I guess, maybe the fact that he's, you know, not had the high level of quality that we see from Ejaria, even when we lose. Swift, I guess, is a little bit more hit and miss. But were you surprised when Ejaria claimed it?
I wasn't too surprised, actually. He's got a habit of coming up with those really memorable moments in games that kind of just stick in a fan's memory when they're say voting for Player of the Month, and that does show how he's come on really well. Actually, he's making those little impacts regularly, even if he's not necessarily at his best, even if he's not necessarily scoring or playing too well in a game. He's still capable of coming up with things like that, and across the course of the season, it can make the difference. And you compare this to other Player of the Month polls we've run where we've barely been able to come out with any contenders. And when you've got people like Swift and Ejaria, both good contenders, and looking across the season as a whole, people like Andy Yeardom as well, the squad feels a lot better individually than in previous seasons when we've barely been able to come out with any standout performers. When we've got players making it hard for us to pick a Player of the Month, then, you know, the squad's in a much better place.
Well, and also George Puskas, I suppose you can say this is an indictment on Puskas or a sign of the squad being good, but Puskas, having scored his hat-trick against Wigan, didn't even qualify for a nomination. So I suppose that is, in a way, a sign that Reading do have a lot of good individual quality at the moment. The fact that we are seeing two players strive clear in terms of these sort of polls, and it's obviously a sign that they are our best players, Swift and Ejaria, this season. Is it a little bit worrying in the fact that they're carrying us? Is it a sign that Reading are a little bit vulnerable? Obviously, it's unfortunate when we've been missing both of them for two games in a row, and I suppose in a way fortunate we've won one of those games, but is it a case that they're carrying us and that's a bad thing? Or is it that we've actually got two really good centre midfielders at the moment? Certainly, you'd say near Premier League quality, if not at the moment already Premier League quality, and therefore that's just something to be enjoyed.
We've got two really good centre midfielders and we tried to make the most of it naturally. And when you lose both of them abruptly at the same time, you're going to miss them. I think it'd be a bit... I think it's on the other side, although it is a little bit worrying that we're potentially relying on them. It's good that we do have players like this in the team, because you go back over the last couple of seasons and the fact that you've been able to say both of them are potentially Premier League level, how many creative midfielders have we had like that in the last couple of seasons? Even when Ajari was here last season, even when Swift has been here for the last couple of years, they've not been at this level. And it's massively to their credit and to the managers as well that they've had recently for getting them at this level and really putting this quality on that they've been able to, because we've not been used to it recently.
No, we haven't, and I suppose in that sense it is a good thing that we can just enjoy them. And if they win every single Player of the Month poll for the next, you know, 6 months, then in a way let it be, really, and let us enjoy it. And hopefully it's not the sort of thing that we have to wave goodbyes to in the summer, and hopefully we'll have them for next season at least as well. But there's a chance that one of them will be back for the Wednesday night game, and let's go now to Big Match Preview and talk about Barnsley away.
There's another huge game ahead for the Royals, so be loud and be proud for the Big Match Preview.
7:45 at Oakwell then, it is Reading versus Barnsley, and going to Oakwell hasn't really been too much of a difficult thing for Reading over the years. Certainly a couple of 1-1 draws recently, as a, well, 2017, our last trip there, and that famous-ish late Barnsley equaliser. We've also won 2-1 there with McCleary and Swift scoring in 2016, and they're actually the second worst side in the Championship when it comes to home form, with 10 points picked up from 10 games. They, I must admit, I'm not a massively knowledgeable person about Barnsley placing, but they look to be quite narrow, and they are a very young team. Their oldest outfield player in the recent games with Middlesbrough and Hull was 25. So, as a Reading fan, we've talked about the complacency that we might have had against Birmingham last time out, and this probably, even despite that, nonetheless, as fans, we can say this falls into the winnable bracket.
Yeah, it should be. I actually read a good piece on The Athletic a couple of weeks ago about basically the gulf in class between the Championship and League One at the minute, and financially there's a big gap. And when you're looking at how much teams like Wigan, Luton and Barnsley have struggled in the Championship since coming up relatively recently, it does show that there can be quite a big gap of quality. I know Charlton a bit of an outlier in that, because they had a really good start to the season and were actually a really good side at the Mad Stad. But generally there's quite a big gap in terms of at least individual quality between the Championship and League One. And that's no disrespect to Barnsley meant, but because of that, it does mean this is a winnable game for us. And especially when you read out that kind of stat about how bad their home form is, it's a game that we really need to be earmarking as a winnable one. Whether Swift and Jari are there or not, whether Baldock's there or not, it's one that we should be able to pick up 3 points in. And the fact that we've already gone to a team like Wigan and played really poorly for the vast majority of the game, but still been able to come away with a comfortable 3 points, I think can work for us and can work against us. It's going to make us a little bit complacent, perhaps, that we think we can play not necessarily at our best for a lot of the game and just hope to bail ourselves out of it. We're going to have to be much higher up our game. We're going to have to really hit a much higher level than we did against Wigan. And if we do that, I think we'll be fine. But if that complacency does work against us, then it could very well be a really frustrating day on the road. And if we do come away with a draw or a defeat there, then the form's really going to start to look pretty worrying for Bowen.
Well, as much as this is a pretty awful way of talking about football, it's Stoke straight after, and we've got a pretty decent record against the bottom five. We've won three of the last the three of the teams we played so far, Luton, Huddersfield and Wigan, we've beaten them all. So probably a game, you know, if we come out of these two games 4 points, I would say, is just about enough. 3 points might be a bit disappointing to lose one of them, but if we come out of 4 points, I think we'd be very happy with that.
I think 4 points would be fine, but again, these are individually the kind of games that we really should have a good chance of winning. If we play well, as we've shown we're capable of doing under Bowen in the last couple of weeks, then there's no reason why we shouldn't win both of them. And I guess really it's the manner of the results and how they come. If we, say, get a win in one of them and then get a battling result in a really tough game in the other, then that won't be too bad. But if we kind of narrowly nick one game and play poorly, and then kind of just about hang on in another one, it's going to look a lot worse. And when you're going up against teams at the bottom of the table, how you play against them, how you dispatch them, says a lot about essentially the level this team is at. And hopefully the results against Wigan and Luton and Millwall as well show that we are capable of putting teams in the kind of bottom third of the table to the sword a little bit, or getting past them quite comfortably. But if we can't back that up with good wins against Barnsley and Stoke, then it is going to be a little bit worrying.
It will be, and let's talk that dreaded time we have to talk about predictions and how we think the game is actually going to go. In terms of the Birmingham game, no one predicted a defeat, so Sim's valiant attempt to bring his win down to a draw after the team was announced still wasn't enough to get a point, so everything's as it was in the prediction league. But for Wednesday night, Sim, I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw away to Barnsley. We haven't drawn many games this season, but they have picked up quite a few, so that's where I'm going to go. A relatively cautious point. What do you think?
See, I always have a bad habit of being a bit too optimistic about Reading, and I look at it and think it should be a win. We should be able to get a 1-0 or a 2-1, but because we have such this bad habit of messing up in games like this, and particularly picking up some frustrating results against Barnsley in the last couple of years, I do just worry about it. I think I'm going to go with a 1-1 as well. I've got a feeling that we're not going to be quite at our best. We're going to be better than we were against Birmingham, but still just not quite good enough to get past them. And of course, from Barnsley's point of view, this is a really good opportunity for them to push up the table and get some points. We can look at this as a winnable game, but they certainly can do the same themselves. And we have to play against that occasion. We have to be very mindful that this is a game they're going to look at and think, right, we could get a win here. And if we don't accept that, and if we are complacent, then it could quite easily be a defeat. But on the balance, I think 1-1 is about right.
Well, I certainly agree with you on that. And thank you very much, Sim, for popping by on episode 212 of the Tyler Sim podcast.
Thanks for having me.
And we go into now two games away from home, but two games with the bottom two teams in the division. Could you say it's the banana skin? I'm not even sure we're quite good enough to describe ourselves as having banana skins away from home against these sort of teams yet, because that defeat against Birmingham has just lowered the expectations a little bit. But hopefully, over the next few days, Mark Bowen will prove with a couple of injury returnees that it was a mere blip in the form of Reading FC and moving away from the relegation zone. Two games, we'll be back next week after those two games. Hopefully 6 points, but we'll probably take 4. And hopefully then we'll be moving further up the table and away from trouble. Until then, thank you for listening and come on you arse. Travel.
smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail, even when it seems on your tail. Funny how I always leave a trail. You smile, why? Why do you sit on this side of the street? Please tell me why. Oh, why don't you break this old biscuit for me? This biscuit for me. Making your mark on the main body. Drink plenty of courage, you're starting to.